Multifamily Matters, a weekly radio show that discusses the current topics and trends in the multifamily industry. Stay tuned and listen to the movers and shakers in multifamily share their opinions and thoughts about what's old, what's new, and where the multifamily industry is heading in the future. You are listening to Multifamily Matters, because multifamily matters.
Well, welcome and thank you for joining in to Multifamily Matters, the only broadcast radio show in the nation that is solely dedicated to the multifamily industry. I'm your host, Paul Marks, and we have a great show today with wonderful guests who are experts on the topic of today's show. So you own, manage, or work at a multifamily property, and if you've lived in Houston for 10 minutes or more, you're probably very aware that right now we are in the middle of hurricane season, and that last year our area was hard hit by Hurricane Harvey. So with this in mind, today we're going to discuss multifamily hurricane preparedness. Joining me in the studio is Jill Bounds, Vice President of Abbey Residential Services, and Carrie Weaver, a Regional Manager with Abbey Residential Services. Welcome, ladies.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So we're going to talk a little bit about what to do to prepare for a hurricane. And I know that you, Jill, and Abbey have a list, a checklist of things that you go through to prepare. But let's just kind of talk a little bit about Harvey for a second. Hurricane Harvey, you did have a property that was affected by Hurricane Harvey. Is that correct?
We did. We had a property that was located off Barker Cypress and I-10, and all of the first floor units flooded, as well as the office and the amenity areas.
Right. And I know you were involved with that, Carrie. We're going to talk a little bit about what you do in response to an event a little bit later in the show. But everybody made it through safe and sound on that?
Yes.
Okay, good, good. And the checklist that you had in place, I guess, actually helped to make sure everybody was doing well and getting the property, the folks at the property, the residents taken care of.
The key is having a plan before the disaster strikes.
Right.
And being well prepared. We like to have a meeting at the beginning of hurricane season with each property, make sure that we have our supplies on hand, and make sure each employee knows what their part in preparing and then taking care of the property is afterwards.
And I think just to state a couple of facts for everybody, hurricanes, I'm reading from a weather data article just so everybody is on the same page here. Hurricanes are large swirling storms. They produce winds of 119 kilometers or a minimum of 74 miles per hour. There's different categories of hurricanes. I believe when Hurricane Harvey made landfall, it was a Category 4 storm. But hurricane season, at least the Atlantic hurricane season, based on this article, is run from June to November. And that is a long time to be standing on pins and needles waiting to see what's going to happen, if anything happens. I did also see an article that said that they're predicting for 2018 hurricane season a much lighter year as far as having hurricanes. Now, we know the predictions are not always factual. They don't always happen the way they said. But if that's true, maybe we'll get a little bit of a break this season. But being prepared is important. So take us through what your plan is, what the Abbey plan is, as far as the first things you do when hurricane season begins, as far as getting everybody on the same page and working through the plan.
We have a disaster notebook, and in there we have all the different kinds of emergencies that a property apartment community may have. And as far as the hurricane preparedness, we start with supplies. We all know when a hurricane's coming that the grocery store shelves get bare. And the same thing happens at the Home Depot and other places where you might buy your supplies. So we have a checklist of supplies, also including update your first aid kit, make sure you have enough flashlights. We all know where they are. We all have the proper batteries. And then we have the supplies that we're going to need. We may keep some. Typically, we don't like to keep a lot of flammable materials, but we're going to have some gasoline stocked up for saws, have some saws on hand, materials to board things up if necessary. We're going to talk about having the plan as far as letting the residents know and having them be involved. We have a letter that we put out if there's a hurricane forecast, if we're in that cone of uncertainty,
right?
You know,
exactly.
That comes along. If it's possible, we'll put that letter out. It gives the residents an idea of how they should prepare, which is to make sure that they bring all their items inside from their patios. Those become missiles in high wind.
Right.
And that if they're going to evacuate, let us know a contact number or email address. And we let them know that we'll be updating information about the property on our webpage. And for them to take their valuables with them. Because if there is an emergency, such as we had at our property, mm-hmm. we are going to bring in a lot of contractors. And they're going to be moving fast to remove those wet materials before mold can establish.
Right.
So they need to take their materials with them. Then we sit down and talk about each person who is going to be close enough to respond to the property as soon as it's safe to do so, to be there to help the residents and to evaluate whatever damage might have occurred. And each person is going to be assigned different tasks, communication with upper management, walking the properties, taking pictures, working with the residents. And that way everyone knows what's expected, because in the emergency, we're going to hit the ground running.
Right. So when you were preparing for Harvey, you have over a dozen properties in the Houston area, don't you?
Right.
So everybody was on the same page throughout the portfolio. And when Hurricane Harvey hit and passed through, everybody went through that checklist. You only had one property that sustained damage, but the other ones went through the checklist, assessed.
You never know.
You just never know, right?
Who's going to get hit.
Right.
We brought our computers up off the floor. We moved our files up higher from our lower file drawers. We also removed our loose pool furniture, for example, and other outdoor items that could become missiles in the high wind. And so we make sure that we also went through the property map with the utility cutoff for gas or electric, depending on the property, and for each of the buildings.
Right.
Sometimes there's a general one, sometimes there's several, because that's going to be very important before a storm. If you have access gates, those need to be opened in case the electricity goes out so that people can get out. What else?
Jill, when you have that many properties and you're also somewhere where you could be affected by the storm, you got to have a kind of a hierarchy. If I'm unavailable or I'm out of communication, who's the next person up type of thing?
We do. Everyone gets a list of everyone's phone numbers.
Right.
And that way, for some reason the manager, they don't have cell service where they are. I've also found during hurricanes when cell service is spotty, that texting goes through easier, and that's something that we do. But
it's interesting to me that hurricanes are somewhat predictable. I mean, you can the weather forecasters can see them on the radar; they can see them coming. Other disasters aren't
exactly.
Fires and wind damage and so forth may not be. That's not related to a hurricane. May not be there. So this plan that you have also handles those types of disasters or those types of events?
Yes, we have plans in place for everything, down to bomb threats and earthquakes, which we don't really get earthquakes here,
sure.
But we are a national company, and
right.
You never know. Sometimes you'll get an odd one somewhere. So we handle ice and wind and flooding, all the different types of dog bites, every single emergency that we could come up with, so that we are prepared ahead of time. Like I said, when the emergency happens, everyone needs to be able to spring in action.
Right. And this is the multifamily industry. So just when you think you have everything covered, something else comes up that you didn't.
That's
that you
right.
Never knew about.
That's right.
So we're going to talk a little bit more about when we have our break, we're going to talk a little bit more about what we can do to prepare. And Carrie, I want you to jump in and tell us a little bit about what happened at the property that was there. But we're going to go to break now. That you are listening to Multifamily Matters, because multifamily matters.
Property and liability insurance is one of your highest expenses. Put Ted W. Allen & Associates' 50-plus years of experience in multifamily insurance to work for you. If you have multiple properties on separate policies, you may qualify for a master policy, which can eliminate the need for multiple insurance renewals and provide you significantly lower premiums. Call Ted W. Allen & Associates at 281-378-7500. That's 281-378-7500. Or online at tedwallen.com.
Your multifamily property's water and sewer rates are skyrocketing every year. The only way to lessen the impact is to reduce water consumption through water conservation. E-Conserve has pioneered a no-cost, no-risk water conservation program, and it doesn't cost you a penny. A property in Houston is saving over $196,000 a year with this no-cost program. Call E-Conserve today at 713-662-3220. For a free analysis of your property, that's eConserve at 713-662-3220. Looking for cost savings and curb appeal? Call WaterLogic, the nation's specialist in multifamily property water management. Using interactive, smart water technology, WaterLogic's professionals can help you save up to 40% on irrigation water annually, potentially adding tens of thousands of dollars back into your budget. Call WaterLogic at 713-983-9555 for a no-cost irrigation usage analysis. Your property will look great, and you'll be a hometown hero.
Well, we're back, and you're listening to Multifamily Matters, and we're discussing multifamily hurricane preparedness. I'm Paul Marks, and joining me is Jill Bounds, Regional Vice President with Abbey Residential Services, and Carrie Weaver, a Regional Manager with Abbey Residential Services. Before we jump back into the conversation, I want to remind our listeners that if you would like to provide topic, guest ideas, or suggestions, or just listen to any archived episode, you can go to the Multifamily Matters website at www.multifamilyradio.com. So, Carrie, we were talking about the checklist that Abby has, and I know it's at the property that actually flooded in Hurricane Harvey, you had an incident with one of the previous large rain events we had, which everybody calls the tax day flood that we had. And so you were kind of aware that that property is sensitive when it comes to potential flooding. So what are some of the things that you did to prepare that particular property?
Before it happened, we had an idea that it was a big possibility on that property. So we called our trash company and scheduled a roll-off dumpster to be delivered for as soon as they had access to the property afterwards, if in case it did flood. So we were very fortunate that we got ahead of the game on that. So literally, I want to say within 2 days of us being allowed back onto the property, we had a roll-off dumpster delivered so that we could start disposing of anything. The drains, clearing your drains on the property is a huge deal. Mm-hmm. That property cleared their drains about 2 weeks before the hurricane happened. So it did help a lot with the drainage once the water stopped and it was able to start draining. Mm-hmm. It helped with that because our drains were clear and free.
Right.
That's a big key on any property is your drains.
Okay. And Jill, some of the other very important items that you've got on your list. Let's go through a few of them as far as preparing for a big hurricane or a rain event.
Well, we talked about assigning duties to each employee, and we talked about removing the objects, both the residents, their patio furniture, and our pool furniture. If the residents don't remove their patio furniture, our people, the day before the hurricane's supposed to be hit, are going to be running door to door and pulling those items inside so that we eliminate that danger. A good idea is to lower the level of the pool about 2 feet. Mm-hmm. Don't want to lower it too low because that can cause the pool to collapse or cause some displacement.
Right.
But give yourself a little bit of room for all the rain that you're going to get. And then turn off your fountains and mm-hmm. your irrigation systems. We also want to get your regular garbage dumpsters emptied before the storm. And run your trash compactor if you have that. Make sure mm-hmm. your hopper is empty. And making sure that we post emergency numbers and instructions on the front of the office, on our website. We have a way to text out to people and push out emails to all the residents and make sure that they all get the information from several different ways so that whichever is the best for them, they don't overlook the information. We also...
Do you get the utility companies involved at all in what you're doing, or have them on standby to if you need to turn something off? Or do you just take that
on? We have utility cutoffs.
Yeah.
So we can cut off electricity to the buildings, the main breakers.
Mm-hmm.
We can cut off the gas and things like that, so that if there is an issue, then we don't have the hazard. Sometimes you don't know with enough time, but if you do, it's a good idea. That property happens to be where they release a lot of the reservoir water.
Right.
And so that's always a possibility for us. And that is why we prepared ahead of time. We also, our director of construction services had vendors all lined up, because like you said, everybody starts getting calls
right.
afterwards. So
right.
we had people lined up ahead of time, no matter what part of town that hurricane might hit, that they were going to be able to mobilize as soon as the flooding or whatever may be blocking the roads, as soon as it was physically feasible to get to the property.
Now, you had mentioned this, the property itself was not flooded from the actual rainwater of the hurricane. It flooded after they released water from the reservoir. So
there was a lot of water up to the buildings.
There was water. I actually walked the property in the morning before they had started the release.
Mm-hmm.
And the water was maybe ankle deep, a little bit, maybe mid calf through the parking lots and stuff. So it wasn't that bad. I was there assessing the damages as of that point. And then when I went back later that afternoon, after they had started the release, it had already risen significantly. We could not drive onto the property at that point. We had to wear protective gear, chest waders that you would normally use for hunting or something,
right.
To wade through the water. It was about waist deep at that point in just a matter of 4 or 5 hours.
And how high did it get?
It got, I don't have an exact measurement. Our buildings are a little elevated, and I know that it got about 2 to 3 inches from the doorknobs on the first floor.
Wow.
Front doors,
yeah.
And that's on elevated level,
right.
So it was pretty deep.
Yeah, pretty deep, sure. And so all your buildings out there, the first floors, flooded.
Correct.
And I guess that would be considered a worst-case scenario or a bad-case scenario at that of what to do, but you were prepared. You had your preparations in place. So when that happens, what do you do from that point on? When you know you've got the issue now, what's the first thing you do?
Well, we recommended that the residents leave the property because the projection of the amount of time the water was going to be standing ended up being a little less than what they projected. But we did recommend that the people leave on the second and third floors.
Did you recommend they leave the property when you knew they were going to release the water, or just from the storm?
After the water began flooding the first, the first floor, and they were actually saying that the water was going to be there for up to 14 days.
Right.
I think they were telling us at that time, you can have, they had electricity upstairs, they had food and water, they kind of wanted to hunker down, but because it was going to be a protracted event and the quality of that water was not safe for them to come and go, even wading through. We did strongly recommend, most people did. I think there were a couple of holdouts that didn't until 4 or 5 days until they realized they needed to get out and get some more supplies. But Carrie and her family actually own a Polaris and were out there rescuing, residents that had stayed behind on the second and third floors.
Okay. And you just get them to someplace dry and then they...
We did, yeah. They had areas in place for people to go to for to be transported over to shelters. So as long as we were able to access the property, we were helping do that on our property as well as some of the surrounding properties in the area that were also flooding. And once we couldn't access the property anymore, in that way they had barriers set up and they were taking boats back there. So we were in constant contact with all of our residents, so we knew which buildings they were in, what side of the buildings they were at. So we would get large groups of them together so that the boats could go to one specific area, get as many people as possible, bring them out. And then we were standing outside that area, helping direct them to where they needed to go for shelters or to get where they needed to be. We had also, due to flooding prior to that, we knew that our parking lots were at high risk.
Right.
So the manager of the property had set up with one of the local businesses that has parking garages to see if our residents could park their cars over there and then walk back to the property to try to hopefully save their vehicles.
Car, sure.
So a lot of our residents did that. So when they were rescued, they were able to pick up their cars that were not in a flooded area and get to somewhere that they were able to go and be safe at.
Yeah, that was very nice of them to allow you to do that.
Yes.
Because I know several people who in Harvey, you know, lost three or four cars that they had. So the first floor of residents that were there, they were completely displaced. They needed a place to live.
Their apartments were unlivable. Yeah.
And then the second and third floor, they you didn't have water that reached that. So once it was clear and safe for them to come back, they were able to continue on living at the property without being displaced. Unless they decided they needed to go somewhere.
We gave them that option.
Yeah.
Due to the fact that we didn't know how long it was going to take for us to get on to the property, because the Army of Engineer Corps, when I had spoke to them, said that it could be anywhere from 2 weeks to a month before the property was going to be accessible safely. So we can't have our residents displaced for that long of a period of time in limbo, not knowing where they're going to live.
How long did it actually take?
6 days, I believe, was the date that the water was still not subsided all the way. We still had standing water, but we were able to get back onto the property within 6 days to assess damages better and help the residents figure out what their decision was going to be as far as staying or going.
And that's optional.
Sure.
So that's up to the owner.
Yes.
Because people were displaced for so long and they're trying to figure out, where am I going to live? We gave them that option. But the second and the third floors was optional. If it had been a longer period of time, that could have changed. But we made that decision just based on the projections.
Yeah.
And so then we organized all the regional managers. We got some tents at Academy. We got some Subway sandwiches. And we printed a bunch of agreements depending on, did they want to stay and just get a concession for the time period they didn't have access to their homes, or did they want to be released from their lease and go ahead and move somewhere else. So we spent at least one day, maybe two, out there, and the residents all came out and we went through the options with each one.
Okay. So one of the things that we're going to talk about when we come back from this next break is what happens when a tenant wants to leave, a resident wants to leave, as far as what assistance do you give them as far as finding a place within your portfolio or let them make whatever decisions they need to make. We're going to talk a little bit about that when we get back. But before we do, I just want to remind everyone that they can go to our website to listen to any one of our archived episodes at www.multifamilyradio.com. You have been listening to Multifamily Matters, because multifamily matters.
Your multifamily property's water and sewer rates are skyrocketing every year. The only way to lessen the impact is to reduce water consumption through water conservation. E-Conserve has pioneered a no-cost, no-risk water conservation program, and it doesn't cost you a penny. A property in Houston is saving over $196,000 a year with this no-cost program. Call E-Conserve today at 713-662-3220. For a free analysis of your property, that's eConserve at 713-662-3220. Looking for cost savings and curb appeal? Call WaterLogic, the nation's specialist in multifamily property water management. Using interactive, smart water technology, WaterLogic's professionals can help you save up to 40% on irrigation water annually, potentially adding tens of thousands of dollars back into your budget. Call WaterLogic at 713-983-9555 for a no-cost irrigation usage analysis. Your property will look great, and you'll be a hometown hero.
Your property and liability insurance is one of your highest expenses. Put Ted W. Allen and Associates' 50-plus years of experience in multifamily insurance to work for you. If you have multiple properties on separate policies, you may qualify for a master policy, which can eliminate the need for multiple insurance renewals and provide you significantly lower premiums. Call Ted W. Allen & Associates at 281-378-7500. That's 281-378-7500. Or online at tedwallen.com.
Well, we are back, and you're listening to Multifamily Matters, and today we're discussing multifamily hurricane preparedness. We're right in the middle of hurricane season. I'm Paul Marks, and I'm talking with Joe Bounds, Regional Vice President of Abbey Residential Services, and Carrie Weaver, Regional Manager with Abbey Residential Services. I do want to take a quick moment and thank our exclusive sponsors that make Multifamily Matters possible. Econserve, providing multifamily water conservation solutions for properties across the U.S., WaterLogic, the smarter way to water, providing professional irrigation water management, and Ted W. Allen & Associates, specializing in multifamily habitational insurance since 1967. So before the break, we were talking a lot about the checklist and the things to go through to prepare, and we started touching a little bit on what do you do once the event occurs and displacement of your residents, and how do you handle that. And Jill, you had mentioned there was a couple of things that you thought were important to touch on regarding that.
Well, we want to, first of all, you want to make sure that no one's injured, your right. employees and the residents as well. And it's going to be very critical to get on the property and look for dangers,
right?
Such as electrical wires, shattered glass, splintered wood, etc. People are going to want to come back on the property as soon as the property is accessible. Mm-hmm. And it's not flooded anymore. And it's really going to be important for the property management team to document to make sure that you get the best return from your insurance. We did not have time to wait for the adjusters to come out. So Carrie and her team took a lot of photos, mm-hmm. documented where those photos were, and kept a activity log of everything that happened. And
the documentation is used to obviously show the insurance company, because you're right, when you have a disaster of this magnitude, that the insurance companies are just swamped with, you know, claim after claim after claim, and by the time they get around to your property, it could be, you know, a worse problem. And you had mentioned during the break of a property that was affected by Hurricane Katrina. Tell us our listeners
about
that.
We did. It's very important to get all the wet materials out of the apartment as soon as possible. I had a property that in Slidell during Katrina, right on Lake Pontchartrain. We had built the land up. However, we got just a couple of inches, if maybe 4 inches, into the first floor. We had teams as soon as we could get there from Houston, about 150 guys, to rip all that stuff out. And because of the humidity and the lack of electricity, there was mold wicked up to the third floor, and the entire property had to be closed. So you're working on a very big time crunch to get the carpet and the sheetrock and the insulation and all of that out.
So you didn't really have an issue except on the first floor, but the damage just through the wicking of the moisture
Gross, the owner, was like, man, if we'd only build it up just a couple more inches. And we thought we were so lucky. We're like, oh, man, we're right on Lake Pontchartrain.
Right.
There's no way that this building is looking as good as it is. And then, you know, within a week, we'd already gotten the wet materials out and everything, but we see mold on the walls in the third floors, all the way up to the third floors.
Yeah. And, of course, Houston is pretty much as humid as New Orleans is, I would imagine. So let's talk a little bit about the fact that you said you had contractors lined up and so forth. What do you do when that process starts, Carrie? When you know you've passed the problem now, and now you've got to deal with what's left.
Our director of construction handled the majority of that for us, but we had the day that we were able to get on property, we had contractors there doing cleanup. They were sweeping the parking lots. They were going through the property looking for dangerous hazards, making sure it was all picked up. They had already started in our office as far as tearing things apart.
Because there was a lot of mud. We're talking several inches deep of sludge.
That just came into the
slip hazards. Cars, yes. All akimbo, you know, dumpsters in the middle of the parking lot, you know. So it was a hazard just to get through the parking lot.
Right.
So that's why they had to start there. But they did. They jumped in. Our director of construction services, every day he kept trying to get there, you know, until he got there. And the second they did, he pulled the trigger. He had them on standby.
And so you've got first floor residents who are not there on site. They're maybe at a shelter or somewhere. And you need to get in their units and start assessing things and start ripping things out. But they still have possessions there. How do you handle that?
You know, that's the part that's difficult, because that's why we tell the residents, take your belongings with you. And this may happen. We may need to pull contractors in. It may be that they have to pile everything up. And they're moving fast. Mm-hmm. They're not, you know, they're not like customer service, right, uniformed. Yeah. How can I help you today?
Right.
People, they're rough construction workers.
Sure.
And they're going to pile stuff up, but they're moving fast. And they're not wrapping each of your breakables. They don't have time for that.
Right.
And so they are going to just pile things up so that they can get around,
around
and get
it.
That carpet and that pad pulled and get to the walls to cut the sheetrock out.
Okay.
And we do deal with residents who are less than happy about things that may get damaged in that process. More so in the tax day flood than Harvey. I think when you're looking at people who lost everything, they lost everything.
Sure.
And our property manager lived on site. She lost everything as well. But she was out there as soon as she could get to the property. She had evacuated to her mother's house and had given people access. Some people moved to the upper floors when the water started coming in their apartment, and then others evacuated the property completely. Others that were rescued were taken by buses to shelters where their family members met up with them.
And I would imagine your residents, you know, a large majority of them probably have some kind of insurance, renter's insurance of some kind, and they've got to make a claim.
They are required to have renter's insurance for liability reasons, but most of them also have contents coverage. However, you have to be in a designated flood plain in order to have flood insurance. And those people who were in a designated flood plain were notified that they were eligible to get it. But because of the magnitude of 54 inches of rain and, you know, kind of being an unprecedented event, unfortunately, those that weren't, it was a very small percentage that were actually, because the dams do release, there was just a couple of buildings on the first floor. And unfortunately, the majority of the property wasn't eligible for flood insurance.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
And their renter's insurance does not cover those items that they lost
for the flood.
Wow.
If there's not flood insurance. So the majority of our residents, their items were not covered.
We did have some contacts in Birmingham where our corporate office is, an organization called Hatching Hope. And they did, they also have some suppliers of maintenance items and things that they work with, a company that we buy supplies from. And so they had trucks. And they brought kits to the residents.
Oh, wow.
Some of them were cleaning supplies. Some of them were basic kind of restart supplies, diapers or formula or, you know, pet supplies and some basic supplies for the actual residents who may not have been able to keep themselves going more than a couple of days.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And what what was the situation like around the property as far as retail, grocery stores, things like that? Were they shut down too?
They a lot of the grocery stores were shut down anyways.
Yeah.
During it for at least a day or two, I want to say. But in that particular area, we had two small shopping strips centers that were flooded. Nothing major, so it didn't affect anything in that way. There is a major grocery store down the way, but I'm not really quite sure if it flooded or not. I know people in that area that did flood, but as far as that, I mean, it wasn't affected other than just, I mean, short supply.
Yeah. So
we were like on the edge, you know, between Barker Cypress and I-10. So some of the news footage of the people being rescued was in front of our property, and then it went north all the way, all those properties north of us, the neighborhoods, et cetera, all the way back in. And those shopping centers, of course, were
Affected.
Yes.
Yeah.
But we had Fry Road West. Fry Road and I-10, like Kroger and HEB, and I don't believe that they flooded.
Okay.
So they did not. It was just, you know, short
limited
supply.
Hours because people couldn't get to work.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, because I know it was, you know, probably a good week before the grocery stores that I'm familiar with were able to let people in more than one or two at a time. I mean, they were rationing you.
Yes. And they had to resupply because
they
all got emptied out right before the hurricane.
And one of the grocery stores that I went to had plenty of supply. I mean, they were low on certain things, but they just didn't have the personnel. The personnel had not been able to make it there to be able to let it.
Yeah, we had to play some little games there. There were people who couldn't get to their property, but maybe they lived close to a different Abbey property or they lived on a different Abbey property. So we had people, you know, that way so that we could open up even when the roads were flooded for those several days for the other 13 properties that didn't flood.
Right, right. Well, we're going to take a break, and we're going to be back with our final segment. In this next segment, we're going to talk a little bit about the how you help your residents relocate when they have an issue like this. You are listening to Multifamily Matters because multifamily matters.
Looking for cost savings and curb appeal? Call WaterLogic, the nation's specialist in multifamily property water management. Using interactive, smart water technology, WaterLogic's professionals can help you save up to 40% on irrigation water annually, potentially adding tens of thousands of dollars back into your budget. Call WaterLogic at 713-983-9555 for a no-cost irrigation usage analysis. Your property will look great, and you'll be a hometown hero.
Your property and liability insurance is one of your highest expenses. Put Ted W. Allen and Associates' 50-plus years of experience in multifamily insurance to work for you. If you have multiple properties on separate policies, you may qualify for a master policy, which can eliminate the need for multiple insurance renewals and provide you significantly lower premiums. Call Ted W. Allen & Associates at 281-378-7500. That's 281-378-7500. Or online at tedwallen.com.
Your multifamily property's water and sewer rates are skyrocketing every year. The only way to lessen the impact is to reduce water consumption through water conservation. E-Conserve has pioneered a no-cost, no-risk water conservation program, and it doesn't cost you a penny. A property in Houston is saving over $196,000 a year with this no-cost program. Call E-Conserve today at 713-662-3220. For a free analysis of your property, that's eConserve at 713-662-3220.
Well, we're back and with our final segment of Multifamily Matters. We're discussing multifamily hurricane preparedness. I'm Paul Marks, and my guests are Jill Bounds, Regional Vice President with Abbey Residential Services, and Kerry Weaver, a Regional Manager with Abbey Residential Services. We talked a little bit during the break about what happens once the event's over. You've got a first floor. All the residents are not able to live in those units. I know Abbey has a portfolio of 13 other properties besides the one that you had that was effective from Hurricane Harvey. What do you do to help those residents? What concessions do you give to them as far as being able to move or you know, how do you handle that?
Well, I think the first and most important thing is to remember that these people are going under one of the most stressful situations that you can, losing their home completely. And everybody reacts to that differently. And it's really important to, even though you're talking to person after person after person, is to be empathetic and have compassion for their loss.
Right.
And they're kind of like, they don't know what to do, you know, and they're looking to you, well, what are my options? I don't even know what to do.
Right. Right.
They never thought this would happen to them. We did, give rent concessions for the amount of time that, they were not, did not have access to the apartments. I think what you want to run through the different options that we gave the people.
There were several different ones. obviously the first floor had to move. We mm-hmm. had nothing on the second and third floors that we could offer them to transfer into.
Right.
So we did give them a cancellation agreement that we both parties signed. If we could place them at another Abbey property and they were okay with that, then we tried to do that. A lot of them weren't able to do that because our other properties are not in that area and
right.
they want to stay in that area. So a lot of them were released. Second and third floors had the same option. We gave them that concession from the time that the hurricane started until they were able to get back on property. And then if they had chosen to move, first floor, we did not charge rent. We had given them a specific time limit to come in and get their items, like go through their items and get
right.
it out. And they were not charged for those days because it was uninhabitable. The second and third floor, if they were choosing to move, they got that rent concession for those days that they were not able to get on the property. And then depending on what their move out date was, then they were charged the rent from that day until they moved. And then we had a lot of people that did stay with us.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we dropped down to about 39% occupied. We had just hit 97%
wow.
before the hurricane hit. So it was a big...
It was a big blow to your occupancy data.
It was. But really, the main thing is the communication
right.
with the residents. We were in constant communication with our residents. We have a resident portal where we can text things out to the residents or we can send mass emails out to them. We were doing that daily, sometimes two or three times a day, just giving updates as far as what we knew was going on. And we continued to do that after the fact,
mm-hmm.
even after they could get on property. We were still communicating with them in that sense. There were a lot of people who couldn't make it to us to go over their options and stuff. So we were doing that over the phone with them. They would email us, reach out to us through the resident portal, and we would communicate with them in other ways other than person to person. But that's the number one thing that we heard from the residents is that the communication was the key for them.
Right.
And with all of that situation, we did not get one negative review.
Oh, wow.
On social media.
That's great.
Knock on wood.
Yeah.
Don't run to your computer.
Well, I think you're right. I think the fact that, you're compassionate and you empathize with the resident and the fact that you show you care is important.
And that team, that manager lives there. Mm-hmm. She loves her property.
She's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she's just very, very much she's kind of like a touchy-feely, lovey, mm-hmm. kind of person. And her residents know, beforehand that she's a real caring person. And they know that she lost everything she owned as well.
Right.
But all of the team there was, just very, very concerned about the residents. And I think that made a difference. They were like that before.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the emergency, it really helped, like Carrie said, with the communication.
So you've got Abbey, you're based out of Birmingham, corporate headquarters in Birmingham, Alabama. What type of guidance or input are you getting corporately? Are they just pretty much giving you a free hand to be able to do what you need to do to make everybody?
Well, primarily, the communication was flowing up and down
right.
at the same time. I was hearing from Carrie, and then I was speaking to the president. This president was making the owner aware of the situation, what the options were, which way we wanted to go, more lenient with letting people out or, trying to hold everyone there. And so all of that, I was on the phone constantly,
mm-hmm.
Whether it was with the field people or whether it was with the Birmingham team or the director of construction services.
Right.
So they made those decisions based on our recommendations on the ground, because of course we here know what real life is like.
Right,
I mean,
exactly.
The property didn't smell good.
Right.
It had a lot of challenges and wasn't going to be particularly pleasant,
right.
To live on for a while. So that was a constant, I was just on the phone constantly, 10 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I think I forgot to mention is that if you do have a flood policy, make sure that you have rent loss coverage.
Mm-hmm.
And not all flood policies come with that. So
right.
it's important to make sure you have that as well. It doesn't cover everything.
Right. Well, and I think that's a lesson learned for a lot of people. The the storm occurred back in August of last year, the hurricane. So where's the property today?
We're back online, yep. 100%.
Wow.
We have all of our units completed, all of our amenities, common areas, everything is done. They look amazing.
We took the chance to upgrade them.
Yes, yes, we did. You know, we had an amazing construction team mm-hmm. that hustled and got everything together for us. So, yeah, I mean, we were back in our office towards the end of February this year. So a little less than 6 months, I want to say, is when we were able to get back in the office. And mm-hmm. then we had all of our buildings turned over to us.
And I'm sure you're not at 39% occupancy right now.
We are not. It's a slow climb.
Sure.
It is. Because, you know, the first question out of everybody's mouth is, did you flood?
Right, right.
And we are upfront with everybody. Sure. If they ask, of course, we're going to tell them because we don't want anyone to find out after the fact and feel like we lied to them. Mm-hmm. That is our reputation.
Sure.
So we are 66% occupied now.
Well,
it's slowly getting there, but, mm-hmm. Yeah, we're filling it back up with, you know, the neighbors that our current residents want.
Yeah.
The same residence type that we had prior to that. And everybody's happy.
That's good.
You know, our residents that stayed could not, they were planning the next resident get together before
that's great.
They were even allowed back on the property. Yeah. Like they couldn't wait to get back on the property so that everybody could get together and share stories and talk. And, you know, we did. We had a big barbecue after we were allowed. That's once great. We got the grounds cleaned up enough, we had a huge barbecue for all the residents.
That's great.
Yeah, we just got our last buildings the end of June.
End of June.
Yeah.
So one of the phenomenons that occurs when we have a storm like this is absorption of units at other properties that weren't affected.
Yes.
You know, you all of a sudden their occupancy starts to climb. And I've talked to some folks that that have properties that had a big jump up in their occupancy, and now they're starting to see that in some cases it's like they would expect. It's going, you know, people are getting back into their homes and it's going back down to where it was before. And others are saying that a lot of people love the apartment living that they have, and they don't have any responsibilities like they would have with a home. What did you find with your properties?
We have had that. Now, it wasn't as drastic as an increase in occupancy as Ike was. I mean, after Ike, everybody was full. It's not quite that drastic, but we did pick up a lot of homeowners, and their homes are beginning to get ready. But some people, especially maybe retired people mm-hmm. or people near the end of their working careers, were kind of thought apartments were like camping, living rough, you know, right. pretty basic, ugly. And the apartments today have beautiful amenities mm-hmm. and somebody else mows that grass. And
right.
If the littlest thing, breaks, someone comes and fixes it the same day. You don't have to find a maintenance guy. And so they kind of found the lifestyle is a little more carefree.
Right.
And the build back of some of that hurricane damage is, you know, of course, there's a lot of people still not back in their homes. It's a
sure.
very lengthy process.
Right.
And so, yeah, they decided that maybe apartment living wasn't so bad. Yeah,
that's good. Well, that's good for the industry. I want to give you guys a moment to kind of just let our listeners know a little bit about you, what your background in the industry is, and tell us some more about Abbey Residential Services.
Well, Abbey Residential is based out of Birmingham. We have about 25 properties in the southeast. 14 of those are in Houston.
Right.
They're as far north as Conroe, the Woodlands. A lot of our portfolio is located in the Energy Corridor. And then we have a northwest contingent, Tomball, Cypress, over Willowbrook area over there. And we have two different business models. One is to buy an older property and redo the insides almost completely. I always say except for the tub and the toilet.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like a brand new property inside, and then fix up the outside and add amenities in a lot of cases. And then the other is to build Class A new construction. And both of those models work well, and it's a range of salary levels that we serve
right.
In the community. And basically, our number one thing is that we want to provide comfortable homes where people are happy to come hang up their hat every day.
And all your properties are tagged with the Abbey name, is that correct?
They are all, yeah. You can recognize us. They're all the Abbey at. The only one that's different is Lake Windermere is the Abbey on Lake Windermere because right. It's on a lake. That's right. But the others are all Abbey at.
Right. And a little bit about your background and how you got in the industry.
I have been in the business since 1981. I moved to Houston and I was looking for an apartment. And I didn't understand the qualifying. I came from a college town. You know, you just applied and you got it. And they're like, well, you don't make enough money. You know, I'm like, yeah, all I have is a car insurance and telephone. And they're like, no, you don't make enough money. So somehow the sales job of me trying to say, yeah, I eat macaroni and cheese for a week. You know, that's all I need. I got a job as a leasing agent. And then now here I am today.
Not an uncommon story that I've found. How about you, Carrie?
I've been in the business for 21 years. Mm-hmm. Right as soon as I got out of high school, started as a leasing agent on a small little property and just worked my way up. Been mm-hmm. in it ever since.
Yeah.
Tried several times thinking I was going to get out of it and just came right back.
Well, I can tell you that I've met several people in the industry who have, many people who have taken that same track, started out in leasing and got into management. I know there's probably more, but I've only personally met one who went the opposite route. They started out in management and went over to leasing. So I don't know why that is, but that's what I've seen in my experience. Well, thank you guys for joining me today and talking about this subject. I know it's very informative for our listeners because we are right in the middle of hurricane season. We are going to be back each and every Friday right here at 10 o'clock on Business 1110 AM KTEK. You have been listening to Multifamily Matters because multifamily matters.
Thank you for listening to Multifamily Matters, a weekly radio show that discusses current topics and trends in the multifamily industry. To find out more about the show or make suggestions for topics or interesting guests, go to multifamilyradio.com. You have been listening to Multifamily Matters because multifamily matters.